take a 6,500-mile drive around the Great Lakes. The Great Lakes Commission established the Circle Tour in 1988 as a scenic tourist drive around the five lakes and through the eight states and Ontario, by the way, that make up the Great Lakes Commission. Just to navigate Lake Michigan's 900-mile Circle Tour alone would take about 14 and a half hours without any stops. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Thomas Chevry biked around the lakes over the course of four summers. He's a political science professor at Ithaca College. His new book, published by University of Minnesota Press, is titled The Great Lakes at 10 Miles an Hour, One Cyclist's Journey Along the Shores of the Inland Seas. Thomas, welcome to the show.
Hi.
So how did this idea come to you to go around all the Great Lakes?
Well, I'd done bicycle touring in the past, and as I say in the book, I was living in Mongolia at a certain point, and I started thinking about, places closer to home that might be as interesting and in some ways as exotic as, far-off places. And I grew up fairly close to the Great Lakes, and it just occurred to me that, the Great Lakes in some ways was unexplored territory, at least for me. So it might be interesting and fun to take a look at it. Plus, I grew up in a city that's, been deindustrialized, so I was kind of interested in the history of that and how things have changed over time. So, I had this kind of somewhat vague personal connection and just an interest, and I thought, the Great Lakes are pretty amazing, so I should check them out.
Did you have a plan when you set out for each of these long bike tours? Because as I'm reading your book, you get lost a lot. I mean, and you're very transparent about it. I mean, in some travel books, nothing goes wrong really. But you had a lot of issues. So how much did you plan these out?
I didn't really. I'm not much of a planner for things like this, or maybe in general. I just, started out, I'm going to go around Lake Erie, and then I, took off. With the vague idea of I'd do, a certain number of miles a day, 60 to, 100 miles a day. And other than that, I didn't really have much of a plan. More recently, I've gotten a GPS, so I don't get lost as much. But, yeah, I did get lost a lot. It's easy to get lost, actually, when you're riding around on a bike.
Well, I was kind of searching the book. But looking for how many miles you went on this journey, how long it took you. And then I thought to myself, I'm looking for the wrong thing. It's not about the miles.
No.
It's not about how many hours or how many stops. And then I had to tell myself, stop looking for that detail. Because obviously, to you, it's not that important.
No, it's not. That's an interesting point. No, it's not that important. I never got I don't have a mileage, tracker on my bike, and it's just not something that I care about that much. The number of miles, the number of hours. It's just more about the kind of the experience, and the histories and things like that.
And you saw so many things on this bike ride, from urban settings to very rural countryside. Take us, and if you will, start with Lake Superior. Take us along one of these legs, one of these days when you're biking.
Okay. Well, Superior's a good one. Superior, one of the things about Superior, when I went along Superior, was how much the weather changed. When I started out in Sault Ste. Marie, it was really hot. It was like in the 90s. And by the time I got up to Houghton, it was like 38 degrees. One of the things I learned about Lake Superior is it's got its own weather systems, and the weather changes pretty dramatically over short periods of time. But my first day on Lake Superior, I started out in Sault Ste. Marie and traveled down along, pretty close to the lake, and eventually made my way over to Tacaminan State Park. That was the first day, and that's this beautiful park in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan that's got a waterfall that's one of the largest waterfalls in the East, and although not as tall as as high as Niagara Falls, it's got almost as much water that falls over it. So I just, you know, spent the day riding over, stopped a couple of times. It was hot, so I had to, you know, stop for drinks of water here and there. But just kind of made my way over and found the park and set up a tent, and, you know, that was it.
You make it sound so easy.
Well, it is. You know, it's just, it is kind of easy, actually. It's easier than a lot of things because it's very directed, you know. You just get on your bike and you ride, and it's one of the things I like about it. It's very simple. You know, there's not a lot of distraction.
And one of the things that compelled me to keep reading is, like, where you would find shelter at night, what motel you would come by, where you would rest your head. Did you even plot that out as to where you would stay each night?
No, I didn't plot that out. Because, it's in some ways you don't know how far you're going to go in a day because it depends on the weather conditions, you know, it depends on how you feel. Depends on if, you know, you have a flat or whatever. So, you know, at some point I would just figure out that, you know, I'd try to make it to this point to stay for the evening, you know, for the night. But I'm not really someone that, you know, plans these things out in detail in advance. There are some people that tour on bicycles that do that, but I just, you know, it doesn't really fit my disposition, I guess.
So you started your journey in Ontario, close to the shores of Lake Huron and not too far away from your home in New York.
Right.
Did your ride get off to a good start, a successful start?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Huron was, the Huron ride was great. I learned, you know, I went through parts of Michigan that I knew almost nothing about, like the Thumb and there are these kind of unexplored places.
Remind us where the Thumb is.
The Thumb is in the eastern part of Michigan. You know, Michigan's got the Mitt.
Mm-hmm.
The lower peninsula of Michigan is like a mitt. And the Thumb is that little thumb part that sticks up in the east. And I'd never been up there, and I didn't know much of anything about it. And when I got up, it was kind of a revelation. You know, this kind of beautiful place with hardly anybody there, nice beaches, you know, nice parks. Nice little towns, and I thought that was really successful. You know, that just the whole Huron experience. It was pretty good weather, and you know, I found places in Michigan that I'd never known about that were really fantastic. It was a pretty long ride, but it was Michigan's a good place to bicycle. There's lots of shoulders and. All the way up, you're up right along the shore. The highway goes right along the shoreline, so you're always right there near where the water is. You know, you get over into Ontario, and there's, like, Manitoulin Island is over there. I'd never known about that. The Bruce Peninsula, which I didn't know anything about, you know, runs down through that part of Ontario. So, yeah, it was a very successful start. You know, when I did Huron, that really confirmed for me that this was something that I wanted to do, you know, because I did find these places that were just kind of amazing and I'd never really known about before.
What was the situation like at border crossings and also biking in Canada? How did that compare and contrast?
Well, border crossings are fine. You know, if you're on a bicycle, border guards are not going to probably give you too much trouble. There isn't a lot of contraband you can bring across on a bicycle, and, you know, it's kind of unusual for somebody to cross the border on a bike, and so sometimes the border guards are kind of curious about what you're doing and where you're headed. They'll ask you about it, and so I never had a problem crossing the borders. Plus, the borders I was crossing, for the most part, you know, were places where there isn't a lot of traffic.
Mm.
You know, the only place, I guess, where there, which is a fairly major border crossing, is near Buffalo. But even that, you know, I was up on the Lewiston crossing, and that's not the most trafficked. So when I got to the borders, you know, it was usually, there was no wait and there was hardly anybody there. And the thing about Canada is, you know, Canada's beautiful, and the North Shore of, like, Lake Superior and Huron are really incredible places. But, you know, the highways in Canada don't really have, you mostly are on the QEW, which is the Trans-Canadian Highway, and, you know, it doesn't have good shoulders, and there's a lot of traffic, and there's a lot of trucks. So bicycling Canada is kind of a mixed bag, you know. I like Canada. There are great, you know, nice little towns and cities in Canada. They're great places to stay. But in terms of the bicycling itself, it's a little bit, you know, treacherous.
Yeah, I was surprised that the Canadian roads didn't have better shoulders for you to bike on. So what did that mean for you? Were you biking on the road of the lane?
Yeah, I was. You know, they have shoulders, but they're narrow. You know, like in Michigan or in New York, on the state roads, the big highways, the shoulders are, you know, 2-3 feet. So there's plenty of room for a bicycle, and you don't have to really worry about, you know, traffic too much, even trucks. But in Canada, I guess it's just because the QEW is an old highway. You know, it's been around for a long time, so they weren't really thinking about shoulders when they put the highway in. And so their shoulders are more like, you know, a foot at best. And so you're kind of pretty close to the traffic. And the Canadians are pretty polite as drivers, too, which helps.
They would change lanes, perhaps.
Yeah, they'd pull out. Even the trucks, you know, they would give you some space. So I didn't feel like I was in any significant danger. But it would still be nicer if they would add some shoulders to those highways. You know?
Did you ever feel any danger on this journey?
Any danger? You know, I can't think of any. You know, I thought about that, whether, you know, bicycle touring is dangerous. The most dangerous part of it is just, like, traffic, you know, that there's a possibility you get hit by a car at some point or a truck or whatever. But other than that, you know, I think it's about as safe as an activity that there is. You know, I never encountered any hostile people for the most part, not really at all. And, you know, I never got anything stolen. And I can't say that I ever really felt any danger at all, to be honest.
And so in each of these 4 summers, thankfully you're a professor, so you had some space in your summer, some time to do these. What kind of chunks of time did you allocate to each of the Great Lakes?
Well, you know, just depending on the size of the lake. So my shortest trip was around Ontario. And since I'm pretty familiar with Ontario, you know, I live near there, and I had been around parts of it on a bicycle before. I just kind of did that, you know, quickly. So that only took me, I think, you know, like 8 days or something, 8 or 9 days. But Superior is obviously a lot longer. I think it was the track that I took was about 1,200 miles. So that took about 3 weeks, a little bit more maybe. So it just kind of depended. So one summer I did Erie, which was also a pretty short trip. I think that was about 10 days. And then I did Michigan, and that was, two and a half weeks, something like that. So, that's how I kind of broke it up. I wanted to not take 5 years to do it, I guess. I wanted to combine two trips in 1 year so I could, you know, move on and do something else at some point.
The Great Lakes of North America, there are 5 of them. They span 750 miles from east to west, forming the largest freshwater system on Earth. And Thomas Chevrey biked around the Great Lakes over the course of 4 summers. He's a political science professor at Ithaca College in New York. His new book is The Great Lakes at 10 Miles an Hour. You can join in to the discussion, 800-642-1234. Have you experienced the Great Lakes by bike? What did you think of it that makes the Great Lakes special? What hidden gems on the lakes do you think is worth checking out by bicycle? 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll be back after this short break here on the Ideas Network. Some 40 million people live along the Great Lakes. The Great Lakes have more than 10,000 miles of shoreline. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Author Thomas Chevrey has intimate knowledge of that shoreline. He biked around the Great Lakes in 4 summers. He has a new book about this journey. It's The Great Lakes at 10 miles an hour, one cyclist's journey along the shores of the inland seas. Gathering your thoughts on the Great Lakes as well at 800-642-1234. Have you ever attempted to bike around one or some of them? What was the experience like for you? What questions do you have for Thomas? 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Thomas, I want to go back to Lake Michigan here, and you're riding through Chicago, and what pops out in my head here is you're noticing signs with bicycles covered by the universal no symbol. So you're seeing places you can't bike. What was going on there?
Well, I think there's some of these, you know, very ritzy suburbs in northern Chicago, and they don't want to have bicyclists on the streets. You know, I'd never seen that before. I don't know how to explain it. You know, I'd never seen it. You know, I've never seen it before. I haven't seen it since. But I think they felt as though that was, you know, a disturbance that they didn't want to, you know, deal with.
But you biked on them anyway.
Yeah, because I tried. There was some bicycle paths nearby, but I kept, you know, they'd stop and they, you know, be out in the street. I couldn't figure out where I was, so I just thought, you know, the hell with it. I'm going to go over and ride on those streets. And I didn't. Nobody did anything. There weren't any. I wasn't arrested or anything like that. I'm not even sure, you know, if it would be legal to prevent bicycles from riding on city streets. To be honest, I mean, you know, any more than you could, you know, stop other kinds of vehicles.
So I want to get a sense here of how grueling some of these days were. And if you turn to page 148, I would like it if you would start reading from that passage about riding through that Chicago. Can you go ahead?
Yeah, sure. Okay. Still at this point, I've been riding for more than 10 hours, and I was starting to feel it. The northern Chicago suburbs eventually blend into more rural countryside, leading into the city of Winthrop Harbor. But I still didn't see any place to stay. I kept riding. Before I knew it, I'd crossed the border into Wisconsin. After an hour's riding, I was in Kenosha, a completely different world than the one I'd just ridden through. A four-lane highway sweeps down through an industrial landscape before taking you into the city center. I was back into the terrain of deindustrialization and hoping to find a place to stay. A couple of guys were standing outside a McDonald's having a smoke, so I rode up and asked if they knew where any motels, if there were any motels nearby. One muttered something unintelligible and walked away. The other said, just keep on going, and I'd find a spot a couple of miles down the road. I couldn't miss it. After a bit, I passed a small square building with the word motel painted on the front, a true economy of wording. Definitely not posh, but I'd pretty much reached the end of my rope. Having ridden, I figured, well over 100 miles in 90-degree heat.
Oh, my goodness. And so many things interesting about this passage. Number one, the stress on your body. But number two, the change in landscape from the Chicago suburbs to you passing into Wisconsin, into Kenosha, and you see a different landscape, more industrial. Can you take us through this time in your journey?
Yeah, I mean, just the whole ride to Chicago was kind of amazing because you start out in the south, you know, on the Indiana. I started in the Indiana border and made my way up through Chicago and really almost to the into the Wisconsin border, into Kenosha, and a little bit north of that. So you see how it's all kind of laid out, you know, and all the different aspects of what a major city looks like, you know, from the industrial parts of the south in Chicago, you know, the old industrial centers. Through different neighborhoods, you know, some middle-class neighborhoods. Mostly they were middle-class, or as you get north, up through the northern suburbs of Chicago, obviously, a lot of them are pretty affluent. And then there's a part where, you know, you leave Chicago suburbs and you're out into the countryside when you get into Wisconsin, and you're back into, like, rural, you know, landscapes, farms and fields, and it's beautiful. And then, you know, you come to Kenosha, and it's, you know, an industrial city. So you've kind of entered back into the, you know, the industrial parts of the Great Lakes. You know, Kenosha's like a lot of other industrial cities in the Great Lakes. And, you know, it looks a little bit like it's had some economic troubles, and that sort of, you know, is apparent. And so you see, you know, all these different changes. You just see, like, all the different economic differences in America. You see the difference between rural and urban. You see differences in race and class, and You know, I just think that ride through Chicago into Wisconsin, in some ways you see like just a total cross-section of American society. And it's kind of, you know, when you see it on a bicycle, I think it really just kind of hits you in a way that it might not otherwise if you were riding in a car or whatnot.
Because you're going slowly and you're immersed in the landscape. You're close to it. You're connected there to the sights and sounds all around you.
Exactly. You're connected to it. You see people on the street. You know, you encounter them. You talk to them. You know, you're just part of the you're physically part of the landscape. And since you are going slowly, you notice things. You know, you notice when, like for example, in south of Chicago, there's a bike path right near a BP oil refinery, and you wonder like, why is there a bike path here? You know? And you see the factories. You know, and you smell the smoke, and then you know you see the city people on the streets or you know, in Chicago, you see them doing cookouts on the lake and playing frisbee and all kinds of stuff. So you feel like you're just sort of part of you know, the life of the city and see how it changes.
How much of the actual lakes did you see? I mean, did you get lake views along journey?
Yeah, absolutely. There are places where you don't see the lakes, but there are a lot of lake views. You know, all along. For example, the North Shore of Superior, you're really, you know, well, not when you get over to the east more, you get away from it, but all the northwestern section of Lake Superior, you're right on the lake shore the whole time, pretty much. So you see a lot of the lakes. You know, because the lakes have these complicated shorelines where they have lots of peninsulas and, you know, and the highway doesn't follow all of them, and I didn't always follow the roads that followed all the peninsulas, you know, I didn't see every part of the shoreline, but I saw plenty of it. You know, there are great, you know, views of the lakes. If you drive in a car, you know, around the Great Lakes or any one of the lakes, you'll get amazing views of the lakes and the landscapes that surround them.
Let's go to Nancy now in Verona. Hi, Nancy. Are you there, Nancy?
Yes, I'm here. Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, thank you for taking my call, and thank you for delving into the beauty of the flyover states. I appreciate that.
Sure.
And my question is, I'm wondering if there are 1 to 3 places that you would recommend, especially along the Wisconsin or Upper Michigan shoreline, that you would say, oh, this is the place you got to go.
Well, I was afraid someone was going to ask me that. I hate to make a choice, but there are places that I think are especially, you know, noteworthy. And I, you know, Wisconsin, of course, the Door Peninsula is definitely worth checking out. You know, especially up in the northern part of it. You know, when you get up to Sturgeon Bay, and then, you know, there's a nice highway that runs up through Egg Harbor and Ephraim and places like that. You can go up to I didn't quite make it up to the tip of the Door Peninsula because I was doing it as a day trip, and I had to sort of turn around at a certain point. But, you know, that's really a nice area up there. So I would recommend that as one place to go, and that's in Wisconsin. You know, in the UP, there's a couple places in the UP that I thought were, you know, really quite wonderful. And one is, I mentioned it earlier, but, you know, Tacumenan State Park that has the falls in it. There are two sets of waterfalls there, and it's a beautiful park. I think it's something like 50,000 acres. And so, you know, I say this in the book, but it's not as, you know, as majestic, I guess, in some ways, as Niagara Falls. It's not as high. But the great thing about it is it's like in the middle of nowhere. So there aren't, you know, you're not surrounded by buffalo or, you know, Fort Erie, places like that. You're really out in what feels like a real wilderness. And there aren't, you know, when I was there, of course, the weather wasn't very good when I was there, but there just weren't a lot of people around, you know. There's one point where you walk down to the main falls, and there's a path that leads down there. It's beautiful. And there were probably, you know, like 10 people, 10 of us walking down along that path. So that's great. And then at that particular fall, there's a brew pub up at the top of the fall, so you can, you know, have lunch, get something to eat, have a beer or whatever. So that's nice. And the other place in the UP that really kind of impressed me was Houghton. You know, Houghton, Michigan is an old mining town. And it's just got this, you know, just it, you know, it's not a mining town anymore. Now it's more like a, it's kind of like a funky northern, it's a college town and, you know, backpackers haven. It's also got a nice brew pub. And that's a jumping off, that's just a nice little town, really nice place. And that's a jumping off point to go up through, there's a peninsula that runs up into the Lake Superior from there as well up to Copper Harbor, although I didn't ride up through there because the weather was absolutely abysmal that day and I just couldn't quite make it. But, you know, that's another place I would recommend. And then Duluth, you know, Duluth is a great city.
Well, Nancy, I hope you had a pen in hand for that. Thank you so much for that call. We had Krista on Facebook who writes, the Girl Scouts camp I used to attend and work at, Camp Birch Trails near Merrill, has a two-staged series of three-week-long bike trips for teenage girls who want to bike around Lake Superior. They camp the whole way and get a resupply of food and equipment halfway through each three-week session. They do 30 to 80 miles per day with heavy gear on their bikes. I haven't done it myself, Krista says, but know people who have. It's an incredibly impressive feat. Just be careful of the semi-traffic on the highways. That comment is about biking around Lake Superior. What would you say to going into a structured program like that?
That's great. I think that's great. You know, I wish somebody had gotten me involved with that when I was, you know, growing up. I think that's a fantastic thing.
And we also had a caller who couldn't stay with us, but Thomas, she was concerned that biking as a male wasn't, you know, any concern for fear of you know, that type of journey. But for a female doing this trek alone, there would be some concerns.
I you know, agree with that. There's a certain privilege of being a male bike rider. But, you know, there's a lot of books written about bike touring, and a lot of them are written by women. So there are a fair number of women out there riding around on bicycle tours. I don't, you know, deny that they are at a greater risk of, you know, some kinds of harassment than I would be. But there are also women that do it. And I actually, when I was going around Superior, I guess it was, I ran into a woman and, you know, having breakfast someplace who was riding across Canada by herself. And, you know, she was actually saying, I was saying, she asked me how long I was on the road, and I said, well, a couple of weeks. And she said, well, you know, I've been on the road for like 2 months.
No.
So it is, you know, I don't want to diminish the risks, but there are women that do it.
You also ran into a good number of other cyclists, as you mentioned, who were also on these long journeys. Was there a sense of solidarity or a feeling of like kindred spirits here when you encountered each other?
Yeah, I think so. You know, yeah, there's like, you always stop and talk to people, you know, no matter which, if they're going the opposite direction or, you know, I've bicycled in other places, you know, I've been around the world to different places. And whenever you encounter somebody else on a bicycle that's touring, you know, you always stop and you talk to them and ask them where they're going, how they're doing, where they've been. You know, sometimes you get information from them about a place to stay or a place to stop that, you know, seems like especially attractive. So, yeah, there's like a community. It's kind of a dispersed community, but there is a sort of community of bicycle tourers out there.
Let's go to Tom at 800-642-1234. Tom in Appleton, go ahead.
Hi, that's not my number, but thank you.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm happy that we're talking about the Great Lakes. Great topic, and I think they're the best part of the nation and should have been preserved much better than they were. Fayette State Park in Delta County in the UP is really worth visiting. It's a historical wonder and a scenic wonder. It's basically the continuation of the Niagara Escarpment, which is up into the UP. So it's the same landforms without hardly any people, and really a wonderful area, and it's Tequamanon Falls and Ephraim in Door County. Just thought I'd add a few pronunciation tips there.
Oh, yeah, I wasn't sure, you know.
It's always hard to tell, but I'm really happy that you're talking about the Great Lakes. Thanks for that.
Yeah, well, thanks for the, you know, the correction.
And your Lake Michigan adventure began and ended in Wisconsin.
Yeah, Milwaukee.
Yeah, and you decided in Milwaukee to plan a non-biking day in your trip to see the sights. Why was that important for you?
Well, I did that in, you know, some of the major cities that I went through. I did it in Detroit, Milwaukee, trying to think where else. Maybe those are the only two. But, you know, I'd never really spent any time in Milwaukee, so I wanted to check it out. And, you know, I sort of made that part of my itinerary. If there was a city that I hadn't spent time in, a major city that was worth spending a day in, Cleveland, I spent a day in Cleveland. And I spent a day in Holland, Michigan, because I had a friend there. But I thought, you know, that would be part of the trip, that I would turn it into not just a bicycle tour, but a chance to see some places that I hadn't really spent any time. And so I did spend a day in Milwaukee, which I really enjoyed, actually. I think Milwaukee's really, really a nice city.
And you were there at a pretty tense time.
Right.
You were there when you learned of the shooting at the Sikh temple in Milwaukee.
Right. The day that I came in, the day that I biked in, the day before I reached Milwaukee, I guess it was the day I was going through Chicago. That was the day of the temple shooting.
And you stayed at a hotel right near the shooting?
Yeah, I stayed at a motel out near the airport because I thought that would be easiest. And then I checked out the bus schedule, and then I could take the bus into town, and it would be easy to get to the airport. But that just turned out to kind of, you know, be the case. It was just kind of an odd coincidence. But that was definitely put a damper on my entry into Milwaukee, the idea that this horrible thing had happened.
How did you, when you were exploring the Great Lakes, and you're on bicycle, and you're taking in everything around you, but you also stopped in these major cities to see the neighborhoods on foot. How did that compare and contrast to being on a bike?
Well, that's an interesting question. I do like to walk when I'm in cities. I'm not the kind of person that will rent a car and drive around for the most part. I like to take public transportation and walk through the neighborhoods. And I think in some ways it's the same kind of impulse of as being a bicycle rider. That is, you want to see things up close and kind of take your time and, you know, experience it in a very tactile way. So, you know, the difference in some ways between walking and riding a bike is that it's intensifies the closeness of the experience. When I was in Detroit, I kept getting hit by panhandlers, and that doesn't happen on a bicycle. And it takes more time. You know, you can't see quite as much on foot as you can on a bicycle. But it's the other thing, I guess, that's kind of interesting is when you're on foot walking around a city, you're just like you're just like another person that's walking on the streets. When you're touring around on a bicycle, people kind of notice it, and you're kind of an oddity, so sometimes they want to talk to you. When you're just walking around, you kind of blend in, and you're just another person. So you're more anonymous in a way. But I like both. You know, I like to go to cities and walk around and check things out, and I like to bicycle around through cities and the countryside as well.
If you straightened out the Lake Superior shoreline, you could connect Duluth and the Bahama Islands. We're talking about circumnavigation this hour, specifically on the Great Lakes. Over the course of four summers, Thomas Chevrery cycled around the lakes. His new book is titled The Great Lakes at 10 Miles an Hour. Getting your thoughts on biking around the Great Lakes as well at 800-642-1234. Do you want to do this? Think about it. Do you want to do this? What do you think it is that makes the Great Lakes so special? What hidden gems on the lakes do you think is worth checking out on a bike? 800-642-1234. Post your observations and questions on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll be back after a quick break. A new book out by University of Minnesota Press chronicles the Great Lakes on a bike. Along the journey, there are observations on the geology, the ecology, history, and culture of the region. Thomas Chevry stays with us. His new book is The Great Lakes at 10 Miles an Hour, One Cyclist's Journey Along the Shores of the Inland Seas. You can join in the discussion at 800-642-1234. Have you experienced the Great Lakes by bike? How did it go? What do you think that makes the Great Lakes special, especially to ride around on a bike? Join in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to Jay in Madison. Go ahead, Jay.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Good.
A few years ago, I went on the circle tour around Lake Michigan, just the one lake, and in a car because I'm a wimp. And it took us a week to go all the way around. And, you know, when you're doing it in that sort of an amount of time with all the driving you're doing, you don't have that much time to explore destinations. But I have on my list of things I want to do again is to go. First of all, I want to go back to Traverse City. That was such a cool city to be in. And I also want to go back to Mackinac Island, where I actually did ride a bike. We rode the bikes around the island, which is about a 6.5-mile bike ride. But that island, to be on a place like that where no cars are allowed, was kind of cool just to be able to walk and ride a bike and mingle without having to deal with vehicular traffic.
Thomas, yeah. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. It's Traverse City's a really nice city. That's another college town, I guess, and got a really nice downtown. It's close to the water. That's one of the places that I would recommend people to visit if they haven't, you know, on Lake Michigan. And same thing with Mackinac Island, which is also very historic. You know, it was important in the War of 1812. So yeah, I totally agree. Those are great places, and there's lots. You know, unlike Michigan, that's worth checking out, and those are really two good options.
Thomas, how did your body hold up in all of this?
Well, you know, I guess the way that I think about it, I used to tell people that bicycle touring was sort of managed pain, you know, pain management, because there's certain, although I've worked on that over the years, but there are certain things where there's just certain parts of your body that get stressed, and that's your feet. You know, the pressure of pedaling and what it does to your toes primarily, you know, your butt, and then your hands. My hands tend to, you know, they go numb over time. So, I've tried to deal with that by getting, I get sandals now, bicycle sandals, and I cut them up so that they don't, you know, damage my feet too much. I got a leather seat. I got handlebars that kind of wrap around so it puts less pressure in my hands. So as long as I can kind of keep those three pressure points, you know, keep them protected, then everything else is not a problem. You know, I mean, the actual physical activity of riding a bike is not, you know, you get used to it pretty quickly. I think, you know, almost anybody could, to be honest about it. It's not that, it's demanding at some points, but I think it's manageable for, you know, for most people that are relatively healthy.
At one point, I chuckled because you're taping up your toes, taping up your toenails.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't want to get too far into my physical problems, but my feet are kind of a mess because I've got bunions and my toes are kind of curled up. So they can scrape on the top of your shoes, and then it can become kind of painful. So I figured out ways to deal with that. Now I've got different shoes that work a little bit better. So, yeah, there's just, you know, once you think something that will, you know, if you go out and ride a bike for 20 miles or 30 miles or even a day, you know, you might feel some kind of discomfort in certain places. But after you do that for like 3 or 4 days, it starts to, you know, then you can really feel that discomfort is becoming something that is very painful. So you need to kind of keep track of that.
Did you ever hit a point where you thought, why the heck am I doing this?
No, I never did. I can honestly say I never hit a point where I said anything like that. You know, every day I would get up and think, like, wow, this is a great thing. I'm really lucky to be able to do this. And, I'm happy. When I'm bicycle touring, I'm about as happy as I ever am in the world.
Has it changed you in other aspects of your life?
This journey,
yeah.
Well, I think the journey about the around the Great Lakes is changed, you know, other aspects of my life. Just because I see the, you know, I see this part of the country in which I'm part of, you know, which I grew up relatively close to, I see it in a different way than I did before. You know, it's kind of expanded my view of the world, of this part of the world. And that's, you know, I think in some ways that's the most appreciation I have for taking this trip was just the way that it broadened my horizons of the significance and beauty of the Great Lakes, you know, which, you know, they're always kind of on the horizon or just off the edge of the horizon. But now I just feel like I have this, you know, connection to them that has really enriched my life.
And your reaction at the end of the book was, well, should I start this again? Should I start all over again?
Yeah, at some point I'll do it again, you know. So I suggest the end of the book, you know, I might wait 20 years to do it and see what's changed, see if I can still hold up, you know.
At 80 years old?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
All right, well, you know. That's a good outlook. Well, Luke on Facebook writes, does your book get into the technical aspects of your travels? Luke is wondering about panniers versus seat bags versus maybe a trailer, tire size and type, tent versus hotel. Luke is an avid biker who has done short tours and would love to do longer rides.
Well, you know, I make references here and there to, you know, my bicycle. I'm not like a, you know, my bikes are not expensive. I use different bikes in different parts of the trip. Some of them pretty old. I can fix the bike if it breaks down, but I'm not really technically proficient, I guess, as a bicycle mechanic. And so, again, it's kind of like the mileage thing. It's not something that I really think about all that much. But I would say that there are lots of people that do. And there are lots of websites, and there are books about, you know, bicycle touring and how to go about it. There are websites that deal with this stuff, that deal with the more technical aspects. So what I would say to Luke was that...
Luke, yep.
I'd say to Luke is, you know, just look around. My book, not that I'd encourage you to buy and read the book, but you're not going to get the kind of technical information that you're looking for, I don't think, from my book. But there are definitely places where you can go to find that.
What did you carry with you?
What did I carry? I had four panniers, two in the back, two in the front, and then I'd strap my tent sleeping bag to the back rack, and then I'd carry clothes, you know, because the weather was so changeable, I didn't need to bring some, you know, warmer clothing, you know, some fleece and stuff like that.
And sometimes your clothing wasn't warm enough.
Yeah, I should have brought, you know, I needed Gore-Tex.
just want to point that out, Thomas.
Yeah. I wasn't always as prepared as I should have been.
Not only are you getting lost, your clothes aren't doing the trick.
You know, it's kind of like my life, I guess, you know. Just kind of wander through it and see what happens. But you know, you bring clothing, and I don't. Some people, when they tour, they carry like cooking equipment and things like that. But I don't really do that. You know, I'll just eat whatever is available, and I kind of like stopping and, you know, checking out what the food is like in different places. So and I want to encounter people. So I don't want to just be completely, you know, off the path, so I never see anybody, and I'm out there cooking and being alone. So I don't do that. I don't carry cooking gear. I tried that once and it didn't really work out very well.
I loved your stops for food because I always wondered where you might eat next. And like when you were super hungry, you had a fish fry, and I was cheering you on in finding food.
Yeah. Well, I like food, and I think about it. I like Anthony Bourdain. You know, I mentioned that in the book. So, you know, I'm always on the lookout for a good meal someplace. You don't always get that, but, you know, food's important. And
yeah,
but just
especially
in terms of carrying stuff, so I carry a tent and a sleeping bag. I carry some clothes, and, you know, that's pretty much it, some bicycle tools and, you know, basic stuff.
Let's go to Michael in Green Bay. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Hi.
I took a bicycle trip. We were going around Lake Superior, we left Escanaba, we got up to the Sioux, and then we went to Canada, and by Pancake Bay, we all got hit by a car.
Hit by a car?
And we ended up in the hospital.
Well, that's awful.
Yeah, it was.
Did the car go off the road, or what happened?
The driver was drunk.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the biggest danger of bicycle touring is, you know, cars.
Michael, go ahead.
Camped outside, slept wherever we could. We didn't really even pay for campgrounds.
Yeah, that's a strategy. That's a good strategy.
So there are certainly some risks involved, as you mentioned. There's always the driver in the car.
Yeah. Yep.
Wow. Well, Michael, thank you.
I hope you're okay.
Yeah.
You okay?
I'm doing good.
Okay, good.
Very good. Well, thanks for calling in. And Thomas, as we begin to wrap up here, what are some takeaways that we can get from your book, but as well as if we want to take a larger journey in our life and we don't know where that first step is going to be?
Well, you know, I teach undergraduates, and, you know, one of the things I try to communicate is that it's a big world, and you should definitely try to, you know, get out and see it. And embrace it in however, whatever way suits you. You know, it could be on a bicycle, it could be in a car, it could be walking, it could be, you know, on a tour with other people, whatever. You know, that I think it's just always worthwhile to expand your horizons by seeing more of the world. So whatever people have different first steps, but, you know, I think it's always worth taking that first step. And if you do, my guess is you'll take a second step and a third step, and, you know, you keep on going. So,
another takeaway from your book is that it's okay to make mistakes.
Absolutely.
You don't have to think through everything.
No. No, the mistakes in some ways are the best part of it, you know. In fact, in some ways there are no mistakes that you can make because everything is just, you know, kind of part of the journey.
Oh, wow. Well, so what is your next big bicycling adventure? Have you mapped it out? Probably.
Yeah, I've been doing rivers, you know.
Okay.
That's kind of, so I did the Mississippi the summer before last, and then I was on sabbatical, so I went in Southeast Asia and rode the Mekong part of it in January, and then last summer I was on the Rhine.
Oh.
And then I'm planning the Colorado, I hope, next summer. So, you know, lakes, they got me the idea of rivers, so rivers is where I'm sort of headed at this point.
Yeah, and quickly here as we wrap up, the difference between biking in a far-flung place in another country versus biking here in the U.S.?
They're both good, you know. I've been to Southeast Asia a lot. It's really a great place to bicycle. It's very safe, great roads, you know, good food. So there are lots of options. You know, Europe is always nice to bicycle, but there's plenty of places to cycle in the U.S. that are fantastic. You know, so I don't think you have to go abroad in order to have a great bicycle trip.
Well, you have more adventures in you, perhaps more books as well. Thanks so much for joining us.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, Kate.
Thomas Chevry is a professor of politics at Ithaca College. His new book is titled The Great Lakes at 10 Miles an Hour, One Cyclist's Journey Along the Shores of the Inland Seas. It's published by University of Minnesota Press. This hour of the morning show was produced by Chris Molina and Keely Baltina. Michelle Johnson is executive producer, and she provided technical direction. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network. Coming up tomorrow at this time, it's another edition of On Your Money. Financial planner Kevin McKinley will join us to answer your questions about saving for college, retirement, and much more. That's On Your Money tomorrow after 8 here on the Ideas Network.